checking for the fuck is today? Saturday, January the 17th, 2015. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like our current police state, information security, and strange YouTube videos. I'm Morps, and tonight I have with me the BSV and the Madman. Gentlemen, I am currently drinking some Jim Beam Red Stag. I got quite a bit of it here, actually. What do you got, BSV?
Same as always. Angry Orchard. Madman. I like my hard cider.
It's becoming usual for me, but I've still got Woodford Reserve.
That's good stuff. I'm going to have to get some of that. So, anyways, let's see. I also got a little bit of water here just because I tend to run out of the whiskey too fast and I don't want to have to get up in the middle of the show. Anyways, a little bit of station news. We have our new live show box. I keep calling it a broadcast box, but it's really not the broadcast box. The broadcast box is our server that runs all the time. This is the box we use to run the live shows. And I've finally gotten around to building, getting the new one working. Mason says he's drinking alarming amounts of cheap vodka. Good man. Have you tried squeezing those Mio drink things into them? Somebody told me that works.
Oh, please say it's like a jug of Vladimir vodka.
Picture of Putin on it. So, anyways, I'm not sure if the Mio thing works. It to me sounds kind of like a bad idea, but hey, whatever. So, he says he wishes.
Christ, what Vladimir drink? Vodka is about as expensive as gas. It's like, I don't know, $1.75 a gallon. Should've make you blind. And throw up.
So if he's below that,
jeez,
I don't
afraid
want
to ask.
They haven't finished filtering all the potato out of the mash.
It's like soup.
It's traditional beer with the barley still in it. Wow. All right. I just thought I'd open up. He says he just doesn't want to think about the morning to come. That's why we drink at night. All right. So, for discussion, I thought I'd open it up with Psychro sent me the link to a project called ZeroNet. And so the slug from the page is ZeroNet is a new project that aims to deliver a decentralized web. It uses a combination of BitTorrent, custom file server, and a web-based user interface to do this and manages to provide a pretty usable experience. The user runs a ZeroNet node, and they do their web browsing via a local proxy. And website addresses are public keys generating using the same algorithm used for Bitcoin addresses or Bitcoin wallets. A request for a website key results in the node looking in the BitTorrent network, so they're using distributed hash table. For peers that are seeding the site, peers are selected and ZeroNet connects to the peer directly to a custom file server that it implements. It downloads the files, BitTorrent, it uses their server, so it's a direct connection to download the files for the site. BitTorrent is only used for selecting peers, not for the site content. So if somebody's filtering out BitTorrent, you know, they're just using the BitTorrent DHT to figure out where the data actually lives. Once the site is retrieved, the node then starts acting as a peer serving the site content to users. The more users browsing the site, the more peers become available to provide the data. The original site goes down, the remaining peers can still serve the content. Site updates are done by the owner making changes and then signing these changes with the private key for the site address. It then starts getting distributed to the peers that are seeding it. Browsing is done through a standard web browser. The user interface uses WebSockets to connect to the local node and receive real-time information about site updates. The interface uses a sandboxed iframe to display websites. Now, I've skipped a little bit of the story because he talks about having some custom servers out there for things like forums and things like that, that need a little bit more interactivity than just a flat web page. First and foremost, there are an amazing amount of security issues with this idea. The big one being that if you read a little bit further in how the project works, it's actually pulling the files to your local machine, okay? And then you hit this specialized web page to view it, and it just brings it up in an iframe. It's a neat idea. I really want to like the idea. But when I read how it works, I get so many twitches. just first and foremost, you're taking all this content and you're moving it around locally, right? So you have to copy the entire contents of a website to your machine to view it. Now, if you think about how actual web browsing works, it's not that different, because when you go to a website, the web page tells your browser to downloads all these files from a web server and then renders it locally out of its local cache. Anyone who's ever dealt with a web page that wouldn't magically update on its own, where you had to go clear the cache and then it was correct, knows that's exactly how it works. So it's not that different, but this thing's downloading the entire site at once, so you could slip other things in. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of saying, okay, you have to use this public-private key system to update the page. That way you don't have just anybody who's up here making updates. But at the same time, the only thing I don't know that it's signing the entire contents of the site. Maybe it is. Maybe I just missed that part in the description. But still, it seems like it'd be really easy to insert crap. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but I like the idea of using the key as the locator, because that makes it difficult to spoof the original provider of the content. Of course, without having a registered domain, it's a lot of complexity around this, and it's an interesting way of disseminating data. I fail to see the difference between this and just a local website being shared out via BitTorrent yet. Now, it's a very early project, so maybe there's something I'm missing, but there's no anonymity attached to this. You know, you're directly connecting to another node to pull in files, and you're advertising yourself on the DHT network that you have any sites you browse to, right? So there's a record in the distributed hash table for this of what pages you've read. Like, publicly available. It's like, I'm hosting these pages. That means you must have read them. It's so sort of like,
don't be embarrassed about what you're doing, or don't do anything illegal.
Though the main problem, though, with that is you have to make sure you don't accidentally click on a bad link that brings you to something,
or don't have an asshole friend who sends you a weird link and then never say, hey, look what he was looking at. It's like this thing Big and I were playing with earlier, Janus VR or whatever it is. It's a 3D web browser for hitting, honestly, what looks like an updated version of Vermal, if anybody remembers the VR HTML. And it's actually a really interesting project. We ought to do a dojo on it at some point. I'm not doing it tonight because we were just playing with it. But, you know, you can download and run your own servers for it, but we were just using the built-in server. And I could watch his avatar go look at shit, right? So... You know, we found a couple of very interesting rooms, and it's like, hey, man, I can see you just sitting there staring at that. He goes, what? Oh, shit, yeah. And, you know, you don't think about it, but every page you load in this system is being advertised out to everyone in the peer network that's what you're reading, right? So if you were using this from a location that, say, like a public Wi-Fi or a hotel or someplace where the location was not assigned to you or through a proxy, like, say, a VPN service, a lot of my issues with this disappear, because the technology side of it is sound, except I guess you could do the same thing with a PDF, assigned PDF, or any number of other methods of distribution. But he's wrapping it up in an interface to basically make it a web page. And I assume clicking links to other pages in the system would, you know, download that page through all the back-end process, and you simply browse through it normally, right? The one thing that makes me the most twitchy on it is that they're trusting an iframe to be their security container. It's like, drive-by download much? So,
does this get? They still need to go through a DNS server to get to the websites.
No, they don't. Because what's happening is that DHT, BitTorrent Distributed Hash Table, is replacing both DNS lookups and traditional HTTP on the back end. So file transfer is happening with their own built-in file server. They're using the keys as locators and DHT to contact peers. So it works very much like BitTorrent. Now, BitTorrent does use DNS when you click a tracker link to figure out how to hit the tracker. But at that point, it's no longer using BitTorrent. So, but, I mean, the idea of your machine hosting every page you visit so that you don't actually need a centralized server, I like the concept. I really do. And I could see this working for certain kinds of things. But just as a general web replacement, I don't know. It's very early. I'm not criticizing the project. I hope he continues on it. I might look at it and see. I might make a contribution to it. I don't know. I got to look at it and see if there's anything I can do for him. But I'd like to see some anonymity thrown in there of some sort. It's an alternative to Tor. It's an alternative to I2P. Tor doesn't handle distributed hosting. I don't know that I2P does either. I think you can do some things with I2P. Probably the closest analog to this in the known darknet software would be Freenet, which I think does do, which I know does distributed files. But Freenet is kind of scary, actually, when you look at what is happening with it, because your machine starts hosting random chunks of Freenet and you don't know what they are.
Yeah.
That only becomes an issue when it comes to liability.
I'm a security guy. Liability is part of that equation.
Yeah. I was just thinking, I know why they're doing this. It's freedom of information, but we live in a country where most of the information is free, and I hate to say it, but a lot of the darknet for Americans is
stupid.
Stupid things that I don't really want to support. I just like the idea of a network where the government can't come in and just arbitrarily say that website doesn't exist.
That's absolutely the case with this. That is absolutely true. It's very simple to set up. You run his little Python script and you set up your browser to hit the local proxy and you're going, right? So I could see getting people who aren't extremely technical going with this, because you could wrap the whole thing up in a little script, say with a copy of Portable Firefox, and they're on this distributed ZeroNet, right? I could absolutely see that. I could also see, because updates are going to come out as people browse from the original source, I could see actually very good archiving of updates being made by just monitoring the thing and pulling them in. And I can see a lot of good in this, which is why I don't want to tear it apart too much. But again, from a security standpoint, I'm sitting here going, an iframe is your security container, and I have to pull in all the files associated with your site. I just see a lot of things that could go wrong there. You know, you could have the icon file that triggers Windows scripting to go pull some crap in, and suddenly you've got malware going out over this thing. And not to mention, it's going to be, to anybody watching the network traffic, it's going to be obvious what they're doing. There's no encryption. I'd like to see SSL of some sort layered on top of this. It doesn't have to be SSL, you know, traditional HTTPS. You could do secure socket layer like SSH does, or any other wrapper on top of it, just at least to obfuscate what's going on at a network level. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so they don't know when you're fapping.
Well, not just fapping, but
I wouldn't think of doing my banking on this setup.
No. Well, I don't think you could do your banking on this, because this is more about every user becomes a host, right? So something like a message board or an interactive application where you're writing data back to it and it's holding it for you, or you're interacting with a service, like Amazon couldn't run on this. Banking couldn't run on this. Hell, chat rooms and web boards are going to have a hell of a time running on this. Apparently, there's a back-end system for doing that kind of thing, but that actually requires running a server somewhere.
This is almost just for static sites if you're going to look at news that doesn't stream video.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that really limits it as far as in just a generic internet replacement.
It's a neat project, and it almost seems like it's more like a research project somebody's doing just to play with some ideas than anything. But Psycho sent it to me, and I did want to talk about it. I thought it was interesting.
I think it'd be really cool if it could become a full internet. No one's able to stop the information at that point.
Well, if you're willing to forego server-side scripting, things like PHP and certain centralized services, like, say, webmail, this could, as far as getting information out, you could certainly distribute a podcast on this. Like, we could do a Galaxy 15 radio over this, except for the live stream. We couldn't do the live stream. But, you know, you could certainly publish music, shows, content, links. You know what I'm honestly thinking here? It's going to be like the old school BBSs, where you had, you know, all the different color the rainbow boxes for different, you know, Telephone Freaking, the Anarchist Cookbook, all these, you know, edgy, quote unquote, text files that were floating around the old BBS scene. I mean, I could easily see shit like that floating around in something like this. But yeah, that usually when I have people ask me about the especially at work, I've had a couple of people ask me, you know, what I thought about Tor and I2P and Freenet, and it's like, it's okay. I mean, there's nothing really there. It's interesting, and I know a lot of people like to explore it, but honestly, there's a lot of kids who are just like, I'm being a secretive, you know, I mean, it's like, I'm on the dark net, and it's like, you know, they're just doing it to do it, right? There's no real need. If you're doing something crazy illegal, I could see a legitimate use for it, but most of the time people aren't. And if they are, they don't, you know, if they are and they haven't been caught yet, they know what they're doing well enough to probably not even need it. So, now I could absolutely see something like this as used for something like, say, a WikiLeaks. Because things like that, you know, obviously, you know, companies and shit like that are trying to get them shut down all the time.
They're like just, a mega. Now, would Mega Upload or something like that work on this too?
You could do. It wouldn't exactly be Mega Upload. It'd be more like, you would set up your own little zero net site for whatever the files you were wanting to distribute for you would be. Because if I understood the way it worked correctly, as a consequence of going, it would download any of the files that you told it to get. So when you clicked one, it would just open it on your machine. So if you did have, say, some music you'd made that you wanted to distribute, you could make a zero net page, put your music in it, and it would distribute out via zero net in a method that's not terribly dissimilar from BitTorrent or Mega Upload. Although Mega Upload was a centralized server, this is intentionally decentralized. Actually, this, now that I'm thinking about it, this has a lot in common with the old Morpheus Kaza, I can't think of that protocol name. GNUnet, maybe? Is that it? No. Shoot. I can't think of the name. But the old file sharing systems that were peer-to-peer that were kind of based off Napster. Except you're downloading, you know, chunks at a time to be a web page. Because those had very little centralized servers. They had a server to establish the connection and kind of play index, and that was really about it. All the files were pulled in off of other people's machines. It was all peer-to-peer. So this would be very similar to that. It's an interesting project. Go look at it. I don't know. I don't really have much else to say on it. You guys?
I think it's a neat idea. Yeah. I hope it gets really functional.
Yeah, I mean, it's early days, so yeah, hopefully some of I might poke at it and see if do anything with it. Anyways, so first story up from ArsTechnica.com. It's payback time for the group that knocked the Sony PlayStation and Microsoft Xbox networks offline in December. First came the report Friday morning that a UK man was arrested in connection with this distributed denial of service attacks, making him at least the second person to be detained in an ongoing investigation. Now word comes from customer service database Lizard Squad members maintained as part of their DDoS for hire service has been breached, spilling the details of more than 1,241 users. The customer database Lizard Squad members maintained. You know, I may have...
You don't give your name to a random person on the internet when you're planning to commit a crime with them.
Yeah, I think I misread this headline. This is even more interesting. But the comeuppance doesn't end there. According to Krebs on Security reporter Brian Krebs, who broke the story about the compromised database, all registered names and passwords were stored in plain text. The cache shows that customers deposited, $11,000 in Bitcoin to pay for attacks on thousands of internet addresses. The information will no doubt prove interesting to members of rival gangs and law enforcement agencies around the world. The database was tied to Lizard Squad or LizardStressor.ru, so a so-called stressor or boot service ostensibly available to test a website's resilience to attacks. In the vast majority of cases, they're nothing more than fronts for DDoS services. According to Krebs, the December attacks on the PlayStation and Xbox networks were designed to be advertisements promoting the service. given the breach was now leaked, potentially sensitive customer information that was left woefully unprotected, it's safe to assume any buzz in the underground market surrounding Lizard Stressor service is over. But yeah, I mean, if the people doing the attacks, you would think, would know better.
So it wasn't Sony or Microsoft.
No, I misread it at first, too. I thought that
Lizard
Squad. They had... Yeah.
Well, why you're a customer of them, I don't know why.
Well, so you could DDoS people. Heavy was talking earlier about, you know, doxing people in EVE Online so you could DDoS them during, you know, big battles or whatever so that other ships would go off, right? Right, shit like that. You know, if you're in a WoW guild and you're competing against somebody else is it Warsong Gulcher's Capture the Flag, right?
Yes, Warsong Gulcher's Capture the Flag.
And you knew the real IP addresses of all the people on the other team, you could just kick them all off the game and win.
The other team would just be continuously loading while you ran the flag.
Yeah. You know, it's just a question, do you care that much about these kind of online competitions or not? More often, you're blackmailing somebody and saying, you know, if you don't do X, I'm going to knock your website offline kind of thing.
Yeah.
They took a completely legitimate service and made it wonderful. Or terrible. Terrible. I meant terrible. Because I could see, you know, paying someone to stress test your website to make sure it can handle shit. You just stop after it drops the first time.
Well, that and the fact that they're running a botnet to do it, so they're probably using hacked machines around the world that they got from drive-by malware to do the stress test.
So you're saying they didn't get the certified ethical hacker either?
I don't know. Fuck.
No, they're not certified ethical hackers.
Probably not, but yeah.
It's hilarious that they've left incriminating evidence in clear text on their server.
Although,
like I said, if anyone you would expect to know better.
Although I do like in the story they have the interested parties and the information as rival gangs before law enforcement.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're playing in that space, I'd be a lot more worried about the guy doing the knockbang than I would the guy coming to arrest me.
Yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know what a knockbang is, look it up. So, it's not a good thing. So, anyways.
Why aren't they moving their server after they're done? I mean, I guess you do want your customers to still be able to find you.
But... Arrogance, thinking that they're untouchable. Usually what it is, they, you know, went X amount of time without getting caught. They assume they'll never get caught, so, you know, whatever, fuck it, we'll just make it work. That, or they were intentionally storing them in plain text so that they could then go try their customers' passwords against other accounts and turn them into more bots. I wouldn't put it past a service like that, man.
Like, yeah. You are our customer. You're now also our product.
Thank you, Facebook. I mean, the way that
I wonder
works,
how many arrests are going to come from this.
They've already arrested a couple of people.
Now, just remember, if you're doing stuff like this, doesn't really surprise me. There's probably a good chunk of those people that used real information they gave to the Lizard Squad, which...
Yeah, that's the thing, is how many people were smart enough to give them bunk info. But... Anyways.
Oh, dude! Using just somebody else's info. Because they probably just want a name. And if it's paying with Bitcoin, they don't know who actually owned that Bitcoin.
Well, they could track it, but it's...
Yeah, but it's not tracked to a person, it's tracked to a wallet.
That's true, but you can usually find the transaction that was used to put money in that wallet, you know, where like with an exchange.
You have multiple wallets.
But the way exchanges come up and go down, it's probably possible to get some money in a Bitcoin wallet, then wait for the exchange to die, and that way all the records are gone, and at that point you've got Bitcoin in a wallet that's probably untrackable.
Use a Visa gift card, put some Bitcoin in a wallet, and then have Barack Hussein Obama DDoS somebody for you.
Well,
pick a name. It doesn't have to be the president on the registry. Anybody you want. Well, actually, they would probably assume that one was fake. Somebody you don't like and you want the FBI to go after them. So
speaking
you can
of,
DDoS Sony and have the FBI show up to your neighbor's house.
Speaking of President Obama, the story from the Wall Street Journal. President Barack Obama said Friday that police and spies should not be locked out of encrypted smartphones and messaging apps, taking his first public stance in a simmering battle over private communications in the digital age. Let me just say that again. The president of the fucking United States thinks it's important that he be able to read your email if he wants to.
And he can. He just has to show up with a warrant for my damn email. That's all I'm asking, people.
But Madman, that's too hard.
No. Now, what they're talking about here specifically is the encrypted smartphone argument that the FBI has been having for years. Well, for since Apple and Google decided to encrypt by default and use real encryption, to the point that if the FBI goes to Apple and says, we need the contents of this iPhone decrypted, they're going to say, we can't do it. Here's the math proving we cannot do this.
So then they go to the person whose iPhone they seized with a warrant.
And when that person refuses or claims they can't remember?
In contempt, that's a longer sentence than life. Because life, you're out of prison when you die. Contempt, they can keep your corpse there.
This is the first person we locked up for contempt. He still hasn't cooperated, so we...
Guard, can you move him? He's starting to smell.
No, we can't. By God, when I said he's in there till he gives me the damn encryption key, I was being truthful.
Apple, Google, and Facebook have introduced encrypted products in the past half year, and the companies say they could not unscramble even if faced with a search warrant. That prompted vocal complaints from spy chiefs, the FBI, and this week, British Prime Minister David Cameron. For anybody who hasn't seen the British Prime Minister's comments, he literally said no one in his country should be able to have a conversation that the government cannot listen in on. In response to the French terror attacks, I've missed the jump of how you get from Muslims shooting up a newspaper and a kosher grocery store to we have to listen to your internet. But that's the argument they're making. Oh, they actually have the quote in here. If we find evidence of a terrorist plot, despite having a phone number, despite having a social media address or email address, we can't penetrate that. And that's a problem, Obama said. He said he believes Silicon Valley companies also want to solve the problem. They're patriots. In the U.S. government, or in the U.S., governments have long been able to access the contents of electronic communications, including phone calls, consumer emails, and social media, typically with warrants through wiretaps from technology companies themselves. But the law that governs these practices is dated and doesn't mandate tech firms incorporate such features into modern apps. In other words, because the law doesn't tell them to put back doors in, they haven't been. Yeah. So the president is backing the "we can spy on you" crap.
And if the government was doing what was legal, such as, I don't know, showing probable cause, I wouldn't have a problem with them, you know, being able to just go to AT&T and say, "Hi, we need to tap this phone." But they're not doing probable cause. They're not targeting Madman because he said so many anti-government things on the internet and has threatened, I don't know, to kill somebody. I haven't, but for example.
Again, no,
wait a minute.
We use pseudonyms in this show.
I might have. I didn't intend to murder anyone. We'll go that way.
You have in jest made comments that could be construed as threats against others' personal safety.
Madman, you didn't intend to threaten anybody's life. Not that you...
Whatever, I'll dig my own holes. But if they were going with to a judge, here's our probable cause on why we need to listen to so-and-so's phone, and the judge signed off on it, and I'm assuming that that's actual evidence, whatever, I would be fine with that. That's the way they used to do it. Now they're just saying, hi, we need to scoop up everyone that's ever made a phone call in the United States in the last 45 minutes.
What was it you said when I was originally telling you about the story earlier tonight? It's like, at least make them go lie to a judge first.
Yes!
Yeah.
I want them to work for it, damn it! Make them lie to the judge first.
Yeah. But
they don't have a need or even a right. They don't have a right or even a need to listen to everyone. Because they're collecting so much information that if I were actually planning to bomb something, it's going to be mixed up with everyone else that's just calling to talk about, I don't know, Pokemon and cooking shows.
I'm not sure that's what the average telephone conversation is these days, but we'll run with that.
Okay, if it's our group of friends, boobs and random RP game.
Fair enough. But yeah,
Mitch,
I mean,
those would probably have a lot more flake words in it than the average conversation.
Well, here's the real rub of it. The NSA's been doing all this monitoring for how long now, and yet we still had the Boston bombing. We've still had this terrorist attack in London, or not London, France. We still had how many other things that have happened since they've started this monitoring?
Since they've started the monitoring, the underwear bombing happened, or attempted to happen. This is a dude where his dad called up and said, I think my son wants to kill some people on an airplane. He's going to make a bomb. And we didn't catch him. The reason
it
didn't work is
the
bomb
the
malfunctioned.
And then they beat the shit out of him on the plane.
Yes. So we were gathering all this information, and then we overlook someone whose dad called in. I'm going to say if the suspect's father calls in and says he's making a bomb and planning to blow up a plane, that's credible. My parents don't troll me.
Well, mine might. So...
they sound like really nice people.
And they are. When they're screwing with you, that's how you know things are okay. It's when they haven't tried to swat you in the past 15 minutes that you know something's wrong.
But when they're messing with you, it shouldn't end up with you being locked away.
You know, you say that, but when you really, really deserve a good prank. You know, and what's a criminal record between family, right?
Yeah, they'll still hire you.
Oh, fuck.
I don't think I want to be part of your family.
But we consider you a brother, BSV. Wait till you get your mail.
Okay, I'm going to now hire some random person off the street to open my mailbox now.
Oh, well, you see, BSV, we did the absolute... Yeah, that might not be fair. I suppose we should go ahead and give you some warning. We mailed you an envelope full of glitter. Because glitter is the worst substance on the face of the earth to open an envelope full of.
Yeah, they're collecting so much shit that they can't even follow up on credible threats.
I don't think they are. I think they're doing something else with the data. Probably blackmailing people or listening for stock tips.
I honestly believe it's similar to what happened with the IRS. It's just going to be used to go after people whose politics they don't agree with.
There's probably a lot of truth in that right there. So... All right, next one up. This is from Ars Technica and is hilarious. The chairman of the youth wing of the Swedish Pirate Party successfully fooled attendees at a major Swedish security and defense conference into connecting to an open Wi-Fi network that he controlled as a way to protest mass digital surveillance. According to The Local, an English language newspaper in Sweden, Gustav Knipp watched earlier this week as around 100 politicians, military officers, and journalists logged into a network called Open Guest and proceeded to search for various non-work-related things, including forest hikes and monitor eBay auctions. Previously, Knipp was involved in the Pirate Party's efforts to create its own ISP in 2010 and founded the Church of Copacism, which is formally recognized by the Swedish tax authorities in 2011. I think we remember talking about the Swedish Church of Copism. Like, they had turned piracy into a religion. So, go ahead.
Does that mean I'm going through one of the sacraments when I download Breaking Bad?
Not sure. But I think it means that you need a pentagram and some candles every time you back up your hard drive.
I'm going to need to consult the Pope.
Hello, Pope Francis. I have a question. I'm backing up my computer. My friend said I needed a pentagram and some candles and a chicken to sacrifice over it. Oh, yes, that sounds correct. He left out the spandex, though. You're supposed to put spandex on head.
After I back up my hard drive, can I have an exorcism?
That was a horrible impression of the Pope, and I should apologize for that.
Yeah,
I'm not going
to sound
but
Italian,
I should.
Spanish, you bastard.
I'm not going to, but I should. So
now, I just want to see a Pope troll people now.
You've got to join the Jody for Pope campaign then, because he will do it.
A prankster pope. That would be awesome. Wow.
Come on, man. We can turn you into a pope.
Yes, you can. I actually meet all the qualifications.
Well, that's right. You are Catholic.
Yep.
In a Swedish language statement that Google translated, provided by Nightheer24.se, Knipp wrote, "All traffic that occurred via our wireless network has been logged. By having access to the logs of internet activity, we can, among other things, see what websites have been visited. The metadata analysis allows us to draw conclusions about who used our network. To go into general and frequently visited websites, such as Swedish newspapers, Aftonbladet.se, does not say much about a user in question, but if the person then automatically connects to a government mail server X and is looking at websites about city Y, and the number of candidates shrinks rapidly to a few possible. We can identify government officials, journalists, and politicians with the help of a wireless network, and their less thoughtful use of an online services demonstrates the tremendous power available in controlling the internet. The operation we have performed during the two conference days in Salem brought the same principles to the great spy organizations such as the US NSA and the Swedish FRA uses. The FRA is an analog to our NSA. The difference is that they sign a year-round operation, and to a much greater extent, they also have access to more advanced technology. The privacy illusion is still enormous. So, yeah, to clarify, what this guy did was he went to a Swedish security conference, basically, and set up a Wi-Fi network called Open Guest. And all these, you know, military officials, government politicians, and journalists started logging into it and using it. So he just started compiling the data just by monitoring what they were doing to try to make a point. And I'm not sure you can even prosecute him for that. I mean, they might come at him for... The only way to really come at him would be intent. But his intent was as a political statement of saying, look, people are stupid. So...
I think this would be a great way to finally wake up people to how crappy the NSA and the FBI and the DEA are. Think about it. If you were to do this in a town... And then just as a political statement, say, here is all the information we gathered from all the citizens. Just dump it out. And then just say, this is what the government is doing to you every day. Should it be allowed?
Yeah, that's effectively what he was doing. He just did it at a conference. Except I don't think he dumped all the data out. I think he was just using it to draw up analytics and then dumped that out. I think it's a fantastic idea, and I don't think... He can really get in trouble for it because, I mean, they connected to him, right?
Yeah. Mm. So it wasn't like he was even actively attempting to get their stuff. It was just, this is open, you joined it.
Yeah, I mean, sure, he was providing, he was acting as an ISP, but, I don't think he was doing anything illegal. You can argue whether or not it was wrong, but it was certainly illegal.
The NSA and the DEA claim to be AT&T cell phone towers.
That's true. Yeah, those are called stingers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this guy, they chose to go to his node. My phone just connects because they threw theirs up.
Well, it's because theirs looks like the strongest signal. But, yeah, absolutely. I love this. I think there should be more trolling of politicians and security government security types at conferences, because those people don't listen.
I think when I go to the Smithsonian, I want to try this. So, you know, take a tour of Capitol Hill with a wide open hotspot in my back pocket.
We'll talk after. Fuck, we're not going to talk after the show. We're talk right now. You want to know how to do this, madman?
I do believe you've actually gone over this in an earlier peer decking with Lynx.
I probably have.
But yeah, if you want to go into it, that's completely fine, because I don't even remember.
This is episode 175. Do you think I know what all I've talked about at this point? I've probably said some really wacky shit on some of these shows.
But I know my phone will do a hotspot, but I don't want to funnel it through that because it doesn't have enough processing power to even do anything. But a Raspi with, I don't know, a portable hard drive stuck on it?
You're getting closer. I wouldn't use a Raspi because I don't think it has enough horsepower for what you want. I would go get a... HP has started selling a laptop that's like $200. It doesn't have enough graphic horsepower to be a gaming rig. But other than that, it'd be fine for this. You set it up with a 3G or 4G, you have some form of internet access, right? And then you set up your wireless access point on it, and that's easy, by the way. And you just have it log everything that goes through it because you run, you know, AirCap or hell, just Wireshark or even raw TCP dump. Have it capture everything it goes through the tunnel. And you're done. I can help you set that up later if you really want to do it, madman.
I'm trying to think, trolling, would I want to be honest and just have their own stupidity betray them? Just be like, open Wi-Fi spot is the name, so they know they shouldn't connect to it? Or do I want to name it, I don't know, Capitol Hill Assistance, whatever. I'll actually go look
no,
up the name
no,
of the
no.
runners.
You want to name it, you want to name it something like, just, you know, open Wi-Fi, public Wi-Fi, Madman's Experiment. or guest, just guest.
I'm just wondering how many buddy would connect to an open Wi-Fi that just says connect at your own risk.
Ooh, that's playing on the psyche right there, DSV. That's sort of like naming an executable don't run me.exe.
And that's worked quite a lot.
Yes, it has.
And I think that could also count as a legal disclaimer. It said not to open it, damn it. I can't be responsible for pwning his machine. I literally told him, don't.
I like it. I think it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, well, take a tour of the Capitol building a couple times when Congress is in session, and then just dump that shit on the internet.
Oh, I think it's a fantastic idea. We should do this.
I think that should be the next meetup. Fuck getting stoned in Colorado. I want to be an anarchist. Oh, and you can get stoned in D.C. now. Both plans. Fucking
they
both plans,
it in D.C.
Yeah, they passed it. Recreational marijuana is legal in D.C.
Didn't the federal government try to step in and stop that shit?
They're currently trying, but so long as I don't, if they go with the law, so long as the weed I buy in DC gets smoked in DC, the federal government has no right to step in.
See, that's the thing. You're assuming they would follow the law. That's a huge assumption.
No, actually, D.C. is probably the only place they could legally step in because Congress is actually the law in D.C. It's local. D.C. was never meant to be a state, and it was literally Congress and a bar originally, and an inn.
But that must
they
be
actually
one hell of
have
a bar.
Jurisdiction there, so they might be able to do it legally. I hope they don't, because then I'll have to fight with people on who's going to Colorado and who's going to help me, I don't know, troll our government.
I'm all for trolling the government. I think that's a fantastic idea. Especially because we'll be publishing this stuff under pseudonyms through VPN, so they don't know who the fuck we were. I'm all for trolling the government as long as I don't get caught doing it. My career is actually doing really well right now. I don't want to fuck it up.
No, you'd stick this on the resume. It's like, I know how to do this. I know how to prevent other people from doing it to you.
Yeah, after we publish it. All right. Let's see here. Next story up is from The Register. Installing computer programs without consent has become a civil offense punishable by fines in Canada this week. Under the new regulations that form part of Canada's anti-spam legislation, it is now illegal for a website to automatically install software on a visitor's computer or an app on your phone to be updated without first obtaining express consent from the owner or another authorized party. The updated rules are designed to protect Canadians from the most damaging and deceptive forms of spam and online threats without interfering with legitimate business. The revised rules are targeting nuisances and worse, such as adware on PCs and rogue apps on smartphones. False or misleading representations of products or services are also prohibited under the new regulations. I would assume that was already covered under false advertising, but the revised rules are... Oh, I've already read that line. Canadians are encouraged to report suspected violations of Canada's anti-spam laws to the Spam Reporting Center. Meanwhile, the CRTC, Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission, is collaborating with the Industry Canada to run sessions across the country designed to help businesses understand and prepare for the new rules. The CRTC is the lead agency in enforcing... Okay, so Canada has basically outlawed unauthorized updates, which means... like toolbars and self-installing crap, drive-by malware, and the occasional Windows updates. Because Microsoft has pushed out updates without asking, and Apple has not pushed out updates without asking. They just did it, meaning they've had the capability all this time and just chose not to use it, is actually now illegal, and you can be fined for doing it in Canada. Now, the only thing is a lot of this drive-by malware is usually on hacked websites, and I'm not sure how you would enforce it. That's the thing. It's like, yeah, this thing updated on my machine without me asking. Oh, it's from China. I mean, how does that work? I love the concept that China's, or that China, that Canada's actually trying to do something about people abusing the internet and software and people who don't understand how the internet works. I just don't know how effective it's going to be.
The other problem, and I believe Mozilla's the last time I ran into this is when I re-downloaded it. A lot of things now, it just comes with the box, but you have to unclick it. It's already selected. Download McAfee.
No.
Yeah, that's true. So, yeah, the Java does that now. I mean, Java tries to install McAfee every time you update, which is fairly often if you're keeping your machine up.
So when I'm attempting to just get the programs I want, unless you're paying attention, you've consented to let them dump shit on your computer.
I imagine consent is going to be really loosely defined for purposes of this law. Just because I don't know how you wouldn't. From just a practicality standpoint.
On the website, it's if you can send is the box clicked? Or are they going to phrase it where the law is everything is off by default and you have to actually click to say yes, you want to do something?
No, it just says consent.
Okay, well then this law does nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's something lawyers can try to have fun with, but as far as practically cleaning up something, it does nothing.
I agree. So... All right, let's see. Next story is from Business Insider and is scary. Buried in a Microsoft blog post Monday morning was one interesting tidbit. The company described how it could use its Kinect hardware to help retailers recognize shoppers and offer them a tailored shopping experience. They're selling the Kinect to stores to say, oh, that's Madman over there looking at women's lingerie. I don't know. I just picked something.
At the time, I had a manager name tag on and had plenty of legitimate reasons to be in that department.
The Kinect is, of course, a motion controller accessory for the Xbox. The blog post detailed a series of ways Microsoft could help retailers create more modern shopping experiences for their customers. Here's the bit on Kinect being used for shopping. The NEC biometric interface with Kinect camera system provides demographic and face recognition. It recognizes what race you are. I don't know how.
So it works with black people now? For a long time, the Kinect didn't see black people.
It wasn't racist, it was just colorblind.
It was completely colorblind, so it couldn't tell you that the black person was in the room because it ignored it. So for this thing to actually work, I'm going to have to say, Microsoft, congrats for fixing your earlier problem. Now work on Windows 8 and make it easier.
Retailers can use this information for analysis and for providing the customers with a more personal selling experience. Media Cart will change the shopping cart as we know it. Adding a location-aware tablet to the cart allows the retailer to present a personal... Okay, I've seen how shit-kicked shopping carts get. Putting a tablet on there is not a great idea. will allow a retailer to present a personal and relevant shopping experience to its customer. This allows context-sensitive ads and promotions when in front of various products, along with a barcode scanning. This is going to be you're walking on the aisle and the cart saying, you should buy cereal. You should buy that cereal. You want that cereal. You bought that cereal last week. You should buy more.
Not just that. Annoying. It's checking Microsoft's database, right, to track you down, do the biometrics.
I'd assume.
I could see this thing taking pictures of what's in your living room. It's like when you were watching Jerry Springer, you were eating Cheetos. This is a brand of Cheetos you want to buy or flavor, whatever. I want to have all kinds of fun conspiracy theories on this one.
Okay, let me stop here for a second and why this bothers me so much. I mean, yeah, it's advertising, and sure, you could just ignore the cart screaming at you to buy crap, right? But how many people, when you've been in a store, right? Madman, you should know this better than any of us. And the computer says it's X. How many of these hourly people who don't give a shit about their job, who they're just there to earn a paycheck, we'll just, oh, well, the computer says that, we've got to do that. How many people are just going to blindly do whatever the computer tells them to do?
It's not just employees. I believe a lot of customers would blindly do what the iPad on their shopping cart told them to do.
So when the iPad says, you know, Bill, we know you were masturbating while eating Cheetos watching Jerry Springer the other night. You should buy this new lotion, this soap, and these new Cheetos that don't leave cheese stains. I mean,
why would you be masturbating while watching Jerry Springer?
Fuck, I don't know. I was just trying to think of a stupid example.
Okay. That being said, I think stupid people would buy it. But what scares me is the same thing that's always scared me about the Kinect. It's watching me in my home, and now it's telling more and more people what I do.
And now because it's watching you wherever reasons. You are.
It's more important that somebody knows your habits so they can try to sell you something than it is that they respect your personal privacy.
They can just put out a good product, and I'll buy it.
Well, but what if you're not interested in My Little Pony dolls? It could be the best My Little Pony doll ever. But you're just not interested in that because it's My Little Pony.
Then I'm not your market, and if the Kinect is spying on me, I'm still not going to buy it.
I know, I'm just having fun.
Yeah. But yeah, it's pretty much just turning into the every sci-fi movie thing of you show up at the store and they know your name and what you want.
Just unplug the Xbox after you're done playing.
Okay, well, it's not so much.
Yeah. Well, I've lost track of what I was going to say, sorry.
In other words, Microsoft says retailers can connect to the Kinect hardware, which would identify customers to enable an enabled application that would be able to analyze the customer, perhaps taking into taking note of how many times the customer has entered the store in a given week, month, or year. Armed with that information, retailers could make decisions about what they're selling, tailor unique shopping experiences to each customer. So if a retail chain knows that a customer has already purchased some items, the Kinect-enabled application could send a mini-alert to the store that the store is getting a repeat customer and could offer guidance to store employees to help that customer find items they might like but don't already own. God, that scares the crap out of me.
I'm annoyed enough with the customer or the employees asking me if I need help when I'm just going in there to buy an item. I know exactly what I want. Leave me alone. Now there's computers doing it. And tracking us.
Yep.
Because, yeah, Madman, it's not the fact you have a Kinect in your living room. They're using the Kinects in stir. To scan you and keep track of you, too.
I'm fine with that. They've been doing stuff like that for years.
Sir, we see this is the sixth time this week you've been in our store to put the underwear on your head. You sure you don't just want to buy the underwear?
That's what your Kroger card is.
That's true.
This is just your Kroger card without having a discount or the Kroger card.
Yeah. And I don't have many of those cards.
But most notice he's not denying, notice BSV is not denying having the underwear on his head.
I didn't know I was being questioned about underwear on my head. And I don't think this headset is considered underwear, but I could be mistaken.
Oh, good. I dodged a bullet on that one. I thought I had to take the Marvel Comics boxers off my head again. Damn it. And then I was going to put tape over that webcam, because I'm like, Morps has been in my house, and I don't know what thumb drives he's been sticking anywhere. I didn't think he'd want to spy on me, but he's seen me. But, yeah, if it's just in the store, then it doesn't bother me as much. Because I already know they're monitoring me. And so instead of having a discount card, it's just when I walk in there.
Yep.
It's their right to do what they want on their property. It's just when they start doing stuff on my property that it annoys
me. All right, last story up is from Ars Technica, and everyone sent me a version of this one in one form or another. I had like 6 people at work sending me this thing. I had, you know, Psychros, I think, sent it to me. I think Juver sent it to me. I think somebody else sent it to me too. But anyways, this highly stealthy keystroke logger can be built by someone with only slightly above average technical skills for as little as $10. Called the Key Sweeper, it's a device designed disguised as a functioning USB wall charger that sniffs, decrypts, logs, and transmits all input typed into a Microsoft wireless keyboard. Key Sweeper is the brainchild of Sammy Kamkar, K-A-M-K-A-R.
Kamkar?
Okay, we'll say Kamkar. A hacker who has a track record of devising clever exploits that are off the beaten path. The name of the Sammy Worm that inadvertently knocked out MySpace out of commission in 2005. Kamkar has concocted drones that seek out and hack other drones and devise exploits that use Google Street View and Google Wi-Fi location data to stalk targets. His hacks underscore the darker side of the connected world that makes it possible for bad guys to monitor our most private communications and everyday coming and goings. Key Sweeper follows the same path unveiled on Monday. It provides the software and hardware specifications for building a highly stealthy sniffing device that plucks out every keystroke inputted into a Microsoft wireless keyboard. The device can be... Okay, I'm going to stop reading this. Basically, the guy jammed an Arduino, a GSM radio, and then a 2.4 gigahertz radio monitor into a larger USB charger, like the kind that looks like it comes with some routers and things like that. He took the guts from a much smaller one so that he'd have room and put a battery in it too. So it charges the battery when it's plugged into the wall, connects to the GSM network so that all the keystrokes it monitors are sent up to a website, and can even text you alerts when it sees things like password. And he put a web interface on it using the Arduino to program it all to show you in real time what somebody is typing. And all this comes down to Microsoft having not corrected their wireless protocols on their keyboards. And Microsoft actually put out a statement saying all keyboards manufactured after 2011 have had this problem corrected. But apparently when the guy built the device, he just went down to Best Buy, bought a Microsoft keyboard, and it worked. So Microsoft doesn't even know what's in circulation. If they're saying anything made after 2011 is fine. How many keyboards did they make prior to 2011, and how many of them are still in stock in stores? Because keyboards don't change that much.
A lot.
So, but the point is that Microsoft left the encryption on their keyboards wide open, so this little Tensi is able to decrypt them and show you exactly what somebody's typing. And I've seen the pictures of it. It looks really good. It looks just like a cell phone charger. And the fact they put a battery in there, and the charging port still works, even with all this crap running. And when you unplug it, it's still working until the battery dies, and it recharges the battery when you plug it back in. And I don't know about you guys, but I leave my USB chargers plugged in all the time because it's convenient. You know what I mean? You just don't think about unplugging them.
Mm.
So, As far as the device goes, it's really cool. I do have some reservations about it just based on the nature of the design, but for what he put together for, I think his version, his prototype version probably cost him something like $30. I mean, it's James Bond level shit for like nothing.
Nothing like having spy hardware on the budget.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
I think it's neat. I don't really, it doesn't scare me that much. Most corporate settings I've seen all have wired keyboards.
Yeah.
For what? Cost savings purposes, that is true.
Yeah, switching out batteries in the middle of a call would suck.
Go ahead, BSV. I know you're about to say something.
Yeah, I don't think it's really anything to be worried about unless, unless you have a very old, well, just an old wireless keyboard. But
it's also
it's more of neat just of what he did.
It's a very fancy way of showing, hey, Microsoft has not fixed their keyboards, even though they said they have.
And I like that he's calling them out on it.
Absolutely. Because I linked to an Ars Technica article, but if you can Google this thing, and he's got the full designs of exactly, you know, here's what parts to order, here's what to put together, here's the code. I mean, any idiot could put this thing together now.
And hopefully that will force Microsoft to actually do their job and make a better product.
Well, you know, in Microsoft's defense, they're saying that they'd already fixed this, and if you know, any modern keyboard in the store should be corrected. But if you go buy a new keyboard, especially keyboards, I mean, it's how do you know how long that model's been sitting on the shelf? They don't change that much.
I haven't seen, or this is granted, the only thing I really noticed was a TV. The oldest in-stock TV I've seen was a year.
Hmm.
Keyboards, I think, sell slightly slower, so I could see there might be a backlog.
It's just one of those devices that, you know, hell, I've still got keyboards from 4 or 5 computers ago. They're like monitors. They just kind of last forever until you spill a beer on them or rage out in the middle of an intense Minecraft session and fling the thing across the room.
Or notice that your W key's been worn away by your finger.
Yeah, that happens.
The SD and W keys, they're fading. I need either a marker or a keyboard. And what's sad is the keyboard's as cheap as the good markers.
That's true. Actually, so I believe it is now time. I've noticed our new broadcast box sounds much better on TeamSpeak, so hopefully it sounds exactly the same on the stream it's supposed to, but for what we hear doing the show, it's actually much nicer. Less techno remix and more actual what the sounds sound like.
Yeah, it was getting a bit bad towards the end of that last box.
Well, I found I ordered on Amazon a Acer. Fuck, I forget the model. It looks like a Mac Mini, but it's cheap. It's like running a Celeron processor. But the fun thing is, it's pretty much got the exact same processing power as the 5-year-old machine I was using to run the original Showbox. So we didn't, you know, it's smaller, uses less power, that kind of thing, right? But and there's a flashing red light on it. Why is there a flashing red light on it?
Yeah, for a bit, it sounded like someone hit Sard in the head with a brick.
I know why there's a flashing red light on it. That's the sound cards that I took a soldering iron to and made loopback devices so that it would work correctly because we found using virtual audio cables.
Am I suffering a stroke?
No.
He's trying to half beat Sard. Gotta remix this.
We need some dubstep behind that there. So what I have for Digital Dojo tonight, two things. First thing is a fantastic GitHub project. The project's actually hosted on GitHub, which is even funnier. It's called GitRob. Developers generally like to share their code, and many of them like to do so by open sourcing it on GitHub, a social code hosting and collaboration service. Many companies also use GitHub as a convenient place to host both private and public code repositories by creating GitHub organizations where other employees can be joined. Sometimes employees might publish things that should not be publicly available, things that contain sensitive information, or things that should that could even lead to direct compromise of a system, like, say, SSH keys, which happens all the fucking time. This can happen by accident or because the employee does not know the sensitivity of the information. GitRob is a command line tool that can help organizations and security professionals find such sensitive information. The tool will iterate over all public organization and member repositories and match file names against a range of patterns for files that typically contain sensitive or dangerous information. Looking for sensitive information in GitHub repositories is not a new thing, but it has been known for a while that things such as private keys and credentials could also be found in GitHub's with GitHub's search functionality. However, GitRob makes it easy to focus the effort on a specific organization. Obviously, the program is put together to help you audit a company, like if you're doing security and you know they're using GitHub. But if you're profiling a company to do an intrusion, this looks like a pretty damn useful tool to troll through their code.
And those are acronyms. They mean the same thing, I think. The profile and then the audit.
They do.
Who's doing it?
They mean exactly the same thing, and it's a question of who gets the report when you're done.
Is it the person who's paying you or the person who's paying you after they realize what you did?
Let me put it this way. Every computer connected to the internet is getting a security audit. It's just a question of what they do with that information. So I thought this was a neat little tool and definitely something worth exploring. And then from a privacy standpoint, the Consumerist put out a list. Actually, this is a fairly old post, but I thought it was worth pointing out. It's a giant list of data brokers with information on, or let's see, the slug from the article. Here's a cubic ton of data brokers, direct marketers, and data aggregation services with links of how you can opt out of your of their databases. So here's a good list of companies that are tracking what you do on the internet and how you can at least try to opt out of some of their marketing bullshit. So yeah, it's just interesting. Go through and look through who's collecting your information, because you've never heard of these companies, but they know who you are because they work with other companies to build profiles. And this is, you know, things like the Microsoft Connect from the article earlier article. So
I wish we had opt-in options where you had to opt into some.
Yeah, but that would hurt their market share. So anyways, that's all I've got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Pure Decking is every Friday and or Saturday night, usually. We pushed it back to Saturday a couple of weeks in a row here. Now, Laura has shows on Tuesdays and Fridays. Galaxy 15 Radio site, the Twitter handle, the feedback forum, the subreddit, and Madman. How else can they contact us?
We've already done smoke signals.
I think so.
And telepathic communications to Big. Ooh, I want you to write a message on the side of a skyscraper.
Just turn off all the
and
turn
whipped
on
cream.
The lights.
Cream. It'll melt.
It's winter. Oh, wait a minute. Not all the people that listen to this are in the Northern Hemisphere. Jeez whiz.
Jeez whiz.
It's like, easy cheese? What's the melting temperature of easy cheese?
I don't know. I don't want to know.
Well, you're the one that's grilled with it, so if anyone in this room's going to know, it's you.
That wasn't easy cheese. And
okay. But either way, if they put the message on a big enough skyscraper in Easy Cheese, it's going to make the news, and I will see it.
That's true. Create a public spectacle. I love it. All right. That's it. That's all I got.
Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na